Joining me on the podcast today is Anthony Dry. You may know him as the man
as
behind...
Anthony Dry.
You might know him as Anthony Dry. I certainly do. You might also know him as the man behind the stunning artwork on the recent Target books, or even a beautiful mural at the Doctor Who Experience, or even various graphics within the inlays of Doctor Who DVD since 2005?
Yes. 2005, yeah. Tech Diva Tennant's first.
Right, okay.
Box set, I believe. That was the first one I worked on.
So that was 2006 then, wasn't it?
Yes,
but you probably started work on 2005.
Work on it 2005.
Yeah.
To get it ready.
So how did they... for anyone who doesn't know, Anthony and I used to kind of collaborate a long, long time ago on a website that you might have heard of called casterbus.com. And when it first started, it was basically I wrote articles, which I was by no means equipped to do, and Anthony did some web design and some illustrations, which were quite stunning at the time. They don't stand up so well today because they're not really designed for modern displays, but in their own way, at the time, they looked good.
No, well, we only did them so we didn't get fined by the BBC copyright for using images.
Exactly, yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
So it was, you know, let's run scared and let's not upset anybody.
Yeah.
I spent night after night drawing these vectors.
Yeah, and they were good. And then you started getting a bit tired of it, and I bought a TV capture card to get screenshots from episodes.
Yes. Well, yeah, by that time, my arm had swollen.
Were you like the Winter Soldier?
Yeah. Except I wasn't asked to join the Avengers. but the thing was, it was really enjoyable to do, but the more articles we were churning out, the more popular the site was getting, and the more people that were asking to come on board, you're doing like 3 to 4 mini illustrations almost every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And it was hard work, especially when you're working all day in your day job, and then you're coming home and you're doing this for the love of it, of course. And but I've got a lot of things to be thankful for it, for, because, you know, it got me into a professional stream of work in the end.
So how did that happen then?
So that happened because when I quit Casterbus, as in not doing any more artwork, after having a bit of a sabbatical, I had an idea of, you know, why don't I do some Chris Achilleos type images with vector, except I won't do all the pointillism on it. I'll just kind of shade areas of the face and kind of build it up. And the first thing that I did, I think, was a piece with the new Cybermen in. The new Cybermen had not really been released properly yet. I think there was one image online or something. And I got a friend of mine to do the friend of mine is Gavin Rymill, who now works professionally for Doctor Who magazine and does all the renders for those Doctor Who figurines in the magazines. What's the magazine called? The Doctor Who Figurine Collection or something
like
that?
That's exactly what it's called.
So he does all the renders for that now. And at the time, he did a render for me of one of the new Cybermen, which, you know, incidentally looked like Iron Man. But we won't go into that. I did Tennant, Rose, and the Cybermen before they'd even aired. So no one knew what the story was about or nothing. I just did this fictional piece. And I put it online, and I put it on Gallifrey Base. And that's where a guy called Stuart Crouch, who I've been working with ever since, spotted that piece of work, really loved the style of it and the colours. And he basically gave me a brief to test me out. He approached me and said, you know, I've been given the task of revamping the DVD box sets. Because the first box set that came out for Eccleston was like a mock TARDIS, and it just fell to bits, and I don't think the BBC were that happy with it. I think at the time it was just didn't stand up very well as a package, and he wanted to really shake it up. And so he asked me to do a little comic strip piece for the Christmas Invasion, which was going to go in the booklet. And so I did that, and he loved it. Unfortunately, they didn't take that piece of artwork up in the booklet because of the format of the booklet. So I did a different piece instead, which turned out to be the Doctor and Rose. It was just basically the two heads. Mm-hmm. And that was the first piece I did, and that was in the booklet. But because of that, I ended up working on the entire package with them. So, you know, obviously art directed a lot of it, and I art directed some of it, but I did a lot of Photoshop comps and the little booklet. If you've got it, if anyone's got it, you see all kinds of little sort of landscape layouts of different scenes, including school reunion and the stuff on the beach.
There's New Earth as well, isn't there?
New Earth, yeah. So the New Earth one, I did quite a bit of comping to get that set, because that didn't exist. That actual shot didn't exist. That shot is made up of several shots to mimic the TV episode and what we saw there, and the same for School Reunion as well. Those images didn't exist as a whole, so we created them using different shots. So it was quite a nice booklet, and I did all the disc work and stuff like that with Stuart, and that was the beginning back in those days when it was just about to hit its peak, Doctor Who.
And over the years you've done more and more Doctor Who stuff, but you've also been in and out doing other things as well, haven't you? I remember you did an ABBA album?
I did a piece of illustration for an ABBA album,
right,
cover, which unfortunately didn't get to print.
That's a shame.
And it wasn't, yeah, I mean, it wasn't because they didn't like it, they really liked it, but it came as a package. So it came as a package of a TV advertisement and a cover. And unfortunately, the advertisement that was with this cover that I did, they weren't really that keen on. And although they weren't that super keen on the cover in the second option, they preferred the advert more, and that's what won that particular little battle. I mean, they were both supplied by the same company that I was working for. I believe the ABBA picture made its way to one of the bosses of, I don't know which record label it was at the time we were dealing with. I don't know whether it was EMI or Polydor or who it was, but he liked it so much he sent him a print of it, and it was up in his office.
Oh, that's good.
It's just a shame. It's a shame, really, but that's what happens sometimes. There's been a lot of near misses over the years working on other things.
There was Iron Maiden as well, wasn't there?
Yeah, so there was Iron Maiden, yeah. So I've been working with them since, let me see. When was A Matter of Life and Death out? That was the first one I worked on. And I just did a series of logos for them for that. And then I moved on to Final Frontier, which I was tasked with doing more logos and bits of artwork for the album. But I also did a couple of singles for them. And the singles were like promos. So they didn't go on actual physical sale, but the promos were sent out all over the world for like Metal Hammer and you know, magazines and radio stations. And they were physical ones, and they were based off 1950s science fiction comics.
Right.
So they were like an amalgamation of a record, an old 70s LP record, and a comic book, and they were depicting each of the couple of singles. I think two got released, Final Frontier and El Dorado. I think the third one didn't get released, but would come out as a t-shirt, Coming Home.
Right.
So that was, yeah, so I've been working with them for years, so I've worked on all the Trooper label, all the beers that have been released. All those were designed by myself with Stuart, who I work with, who's creative director. So a lot of the work comes through him, and he employs me on a freelance basis in and out of jobs to, you know, provide ideas and art direction and you know, artwork and graphic design and stuff. So I've done all the beers for that, and I've worked on every album since. All the live albums, the last one, Book of Souls, And you still find its way onto t-shirts and things. And you get like freebies and that. It's quite nice. Nice to see them. And I went to see them as well. Finally went to see them. And they were great. And apparently Bruce Dickinson is a massive, massive Doctor Who fan.
Yeah, I've heard that, yeah.
Yeah, I got told that again a couple of weeks ago. And so I'm tempted to send him something. Or get something sent to him. So yeah.
Yeah, you should. Yeah, I mean, you sent something to someone else before, didn't you? I remember you telling me.
Yes, I sent a Target novel mock-up cover to a certain Russell T Davies via Doctor Who magazine when I was working for Doctor Who magazine, and that found its way to RTD, and he was delighted, and he gave it away. but he gave it away to David Tennant.
That's fair enough.
So he's either binned it or he's down the back of the wardrobe or something. It wasn't that great. It was probably all right at the time, but you know, it's not.
Was it the Christmas Invasion one? Or?
It was the Christmas Invasion, which is ironic, really, when you think about it. And that's apparently that's one of the reasons why I got the Target novel gig, because Russell remembered the work that I did and the work that I'd done in the DVD box sets.
Right.
And said, you know, why don't we try this chap and see what he can produce? And that was where that come from, apparently.
So, I mean, that's bringing us right up to date. But I mean, in the interim, you've done work in Doctor Who magazine, like you said. You've done some Big Finish work as well, and you did BBC. You did Paul Maher's first Tom Baker series, didn't you? The Hornets.
Yes.
So Hornets Nest.
Hornets Nest.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I did Hornets Nest. So I was supposed to do all of the Hornets Nests, and what happened was, unfortunately, I mean, I did all the pencils for it, but unfortunately, a family member was terminally ill. And I had to drop out of the project, and I think Ben Wilshire took over, and he finished the colours for them.
And he
looked really good. He tried to mimic the style that they were going to be in, that kind of vectory style rather than his own kind of style. And they went down well. They went down really well. And I think I did something for the second one as well. The second lot, I did two stories, but I can't remember what they were called. They were the final two stories.
I couldn't tell you what they're called, but they'll be in the show notes, dear listener.
Yes. So I did those. It was working for Big Finish. Did Return to the Web Planet. I think it was Peter Davison Audio. And I did a few bits and pieces for... Doctor Who magazine for the previews for Big Finish.
Right. A
couple of Eight Doctor ones. And I actually got my first, I think the stuff that led to Big Finish was Clay Hickman asked me to do a piece for a spread for the Lazarus Experiment in like a Marvel-esque style. And that went into the magazine. And that was, that was one of the first times I was asked to do something for Doctor Who magazine, which led to other things. I had an intense period of what must have been three or four years of constant DWM, the DVDs, Big Finish, Irish Wild Time. I was asked to do Irish Wild Time, design the logo for that at the time, the new logo and the new range. But I eventually got burnout, I think, in the end, because, you know, I work full-time as a graphic designer, and I was coming home and doing these things, and it was starting to stretch me, really. Rather than tearing stuff down, which is what I probably should have done, I was trying to please everyone and trying to, you know, cater for everyone, and in the end, your work suffers massively, because you just can't produce the same quality across the board.
Sure.
And I did I think it was the Android Zatara audiobook, and it was awful. It was terrible. It wasn't helped by the fact that we couldn't use any of the characters apart from Tom Baker. We didn't have the rights to use K-9 or Romana or even who's the main baddie in that?
Android Zatara?
Yeah.
Did you say?
The mustachioed guy.
Yeah, the guy with the beard, yeah.
Yeah. Van der K, is it Van der Graaf K or something like that?
No, that's Graffin Decay, that's Ribos Operation.
Graffin Decay. Oh, is that? Is
that's
that
Ribos, right? Yeah.
It was around it's the right ballpark, isn't it?
So, yeah, it's right season, yeah.
Right season. Which is not bad for me, actually, with Tom Baker. I'm more of a Davison man, as you know. But yeah, so there was a real intense period then of working. And it's, you know, we teased off. I've not worked on a lot of Doctor Who stuff, and to be honest, I thought it kind of had its day almost. I hadn't planned on doing any more, I hadn't been asked to do any more, because I'd kind of quit a few of the roles. Like, I had to quit DWM because it was just taking too much out of me, and I didn't really pursue it after that, and they didn't really pursue me. But then obviously the Target novels come out of the blue. And I couldn't really pass that up.
No. So, I mean, that came out of the blue. But obviously, you'd done the piece for the Doctor Who Experience before that, hadn't you?
Yeah. We'd done these war. I don't know what's happened to them, actually. I was never actually invited down to see them, so... which was a little bit disappointing, but... I took Brian down there, Terra Nova. If anyone knows, Terra Nova used to be a... one of the contributors to Castellabus. We went down to Cardiff exhibition a couple of times, but that was before the big exhibition opened. It was when it was only the small one. So I never actually got to see the stuff on the walls, but I believe it was on the walls as you were queuing up, I think.
Yeah.
And it was in the cafeteria and things like that. They're probably being turned to pulp or on a waste landfill site somewhere.
Probably, yeah. You must have designed that in the usual way, but how... I mean, was it a transfer that they like put on the wall? Because I can't imagine they'd have painted it on the wall. So,
well, it was either it would have either been a transfer or it would have been printed directly onto some sort of board.
Right.
But we'll design it at a quarter of the size. So you don't design it in Adobe Illustrator at size because it's just too big. But because it's vector, you can boost it up. So you usually do it at a quarter of the size,
right,
and then they'll print it four times the size.
Right.
To get it onto the wall. But they would have done either a sticker or it would have been onto some sort of foam board, ply board. I would imagine it would have been something tougher than foam board because people would be touching it and
pulling bits off
to it stuff. Yeah. And drawing moustaches on Davros.
He could probably deal with one.
He could. It'd probably make him a bit more socially accepted across the universe, I think, if he had got a nice moustache, little wig on, maybe a hat.
A monocle. In his bad eye.
You know, hitting the universe on nightclubs. with a couple of Dalek bodyguards with him. So that was... and more recently, been working with Simple Minds, so I was working on their latest album, Walk Between Worlds, and did quite a few singles off that. Finished another single that went out a couple of weeks ago that was remixed by Gary Newman. And that's more graphic design, it's more sort of abstract design. And it was great. We went to see them in concert, and all the graphics were up in the background, all sort of digitised and nice animation.
Well, that must be quite grand to see for you.
It is, yeah. It's quite humbling as well to kind of like see your work finally get up onto a stage. I mean, it was on the stage at Iron Maiden's concert as well, which I didn't expect. I did a big Aztecan calendar in an Iron Maiden style, and that made it onto the stage at the London gigs, well, all over the world, wherever they went. It's a lot's come from just doing posting that image on Gallifrey Base, so thank you, Gallifrey Base, as well. Even though we were in a bloody battle with them at one point.
Well, it was Outpost Gallifreyan those days, wasn't it? But yeah,
that was Outpost Gallifreyan.
It
yeah.
was.
Yeah.
There were some contentious discussions, wasn't there?
I don't know why. It still seems a bit juvenile now, doesn't it? But you know how we all are with our Doctor Who. We all get a little bit.
Well, yeah, there's spicy. There's a territorialness to it, isn't there? I think, and also, everyone has a different idea of what Doctor Who is. And I think it's the same for any loved TV show. I was thinking about this earlier on today, and really, you know, if a show doesn't surprise you, then it's probably not as good as you think it is. It has to surprise you, otherwise everyone's going to get bored with it. There has to be surprises in it. That show isn't your show. It's never going to be your show because you're never going to know what's coming next. And if you do, then that's time for that show to retire.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Now,
it's, go on.
No, you go on.
No, go on. I've talked enough, actually.
Well, what I was going to say, I was going to just ask you to give us, because when I have, quote, unquote, because I've met him, you know, everyone. I know Anthony a little bit, so quote unquote experts on. I do like to get a bit of an insight as to how it is that they work. Okay. So everyone would look at your artwork and think he's done that all on computer.
And they'd be right.
100%?
I'm only kidding. No, 50% of it will be. So the final work is in a program called Adobe Illustrator, which to any graphic designers or illustrators, it's basically a computer digital drawing program where you would use either a Wacom tablet, which is basically like a light pen, or a mouse, which is what I use, to physically draw lines using a pen tool or a brush tool or a pencil tool. So you're still doing it, you're just doing it on screen instead of drawing it on a piece of paper. So basically, your comic artists, for instance, they'll do all the pencils, they'll scan the pencils in to computer, then they'll digitally ink them, and then they'll digitally colour them. That's the way it works these days, as in obviously back in the old days it was on an easel and it was pencils and it was inked by hand on the paper where mistakes that were tip-exed out or had to start again, and then it was hand-coloured as well. What they've done with computers is now they've removed that kind of error from the process to a degree. So now, you know, if final changes come in at the 11th hour or they don't like a colour or they don't like this or that, it's a lot easier to change. Because you don't have to, you know, if I was painting these covers a la like Chris Arkelios did, which shows the great skill of the old artists, you know, the trouble would be if they wanted anything changed on it, you would either have to Tippex some of it out or, you know, use white gouache and sort of paint it all out and then repaint over the top, or you'd have to start again. And that's why I think traditional art, I wouldn't say struggles, but you know, it's not as commercially viable as digital art, because digital art can be changed quickly, and then put back out, which is, you know, one of the reasons why, you know, the turnover time for doing these target novels, the turnover time is very, very quick. And then, you know, it's very, very quick again because I'm in a full-time job, so I can't really afford to dally and kind of omanar over, what am I going to do with this cover? Shall I try this? Shall I try that? I've got to kind of nail the idea within a certain time frame, and then I have to get it signed off, and then they have to get it done by a certain time frame, because the windows are very small. So that's the challenge you face with a lot of this stuff. And I know some people, you know, a lot of people love the covers. Some people didn't like the covers, such as my old friend Alistair Pearson, but each to their own, you know. I don't mind, to be honest. That's what art's there for, to be critiqued.
Yeah.
So but even Alistair's turned into sort of digital to a degree. So as you know, Alistair did a lot of his painting originally, and he still does, I believe, probably still does paint with brushes and freehand. But he's touched, you know, a bit like George Lucas wanting to touch up his originals. You know, he wants to just fix a couple of the things that maybe he wasn't very happy with at the time. Mm-hmm. Or and a lot of artists are doing that. You know, Andrew Skeletta's done that. It's just the way of the art world now and the design world. It's just a part of the natural tool set that.
And it's possible to do it.
And it's possible to do it. Yeah, yeah. And I, you know what, I do. You know, for anyone who doesn't know me, before I got into kind of designing websites and digital, you know, I loved oils and oil painting and acrylics and gouache, and I used to love painting scenes and landscapes and doing freehand drawing and that. But you just kind of, when you get into a professional job as a graphic designer, you don't have the time to spend, you know, doing everything freehand, even though it's lovely when you craft something amazing. In fact, when you've got the time to sit there and craft something, and it's like it's there on a canvas, you know, and it's a one off, and it's, you know, it's not a print from a, you know, a printer.
Yeah.
It's an actual thing, and I've missed that. And you know, when you see like the, I think it was the other year, it was the Doctor Who Target exhibition, you see all the original works up. And it's really amazing to see that. But you just don't get, I mean, you could, I suppose you could find someone who would do it, but you'd have to kind of give them plenty of time to actually paint those covers again. And you know, satisfy the client as well. Let's say if the client wanted to change their mind, then that, you're kind of starting again for a lot of people. And the other thing is as well, which has come into play recently in the last 10 years, is image rights. So the thing with my style, because I'm doing it on computer, I can change it and I can edit it, getting the likeness of the characters really saves a lot of hassle with the with getting them passed through the actors themselves.
Yeah,
because you know, obviously image rights and copyright and all the rest of it is quite big now, especially with like Doctor Who and big shows. And they have to go through, I know a lot of the stuff we did for the DVD box sets, any artwork we did had to go through whoever was in them, David Tennant, Matt Smith.
Yeah.
They would get a say on their representation. And, you know, that all stems from like the 80s, from, you know, Davison. I think Davison famously had his portrait painted for a Visitation cover by David McAllister, I think it was. And he didn't like it. And because he didn't like it, the I think W.H. Allen or whoever it was doing it was kind of scared off from using art, actual artists, for the covers for the first set of Davison's books, which is why they're all photographs. If you've noticed, they're Infinity, yeah. Terminus
all, in particular.
All yeah. photographs, yeah.
Terminus is a dreadful cover, isn't it?
Yeah, it was just a safe option. It was a safe option. And then when they kind of got a little bit of the bravery back, they were producing covers that didn't have any of the doctors on them, but were painted. So Skeletta did quite, you know, the Caves of Androzani, and you get Shadows Jeh on the front, or Warriors of the Deep, and it was the Sea Devils, but there was no doctors on the front for a long time, until really Alistair Pearson come along, and because of his fantastic way of portraying these characters in paint, and very realistic, and his likenesses were really strong and almost photorealistic. You know, the confidence was back for those covers. And that's why they were back in vogue again for the late 80s and the early 90s.
So,
because of that man's strength.
Yeah, yeah. Now, bring it back right up to date. You've done these four covers so far. From the new wave of Targets.
Yeah.
There's Rose by Russell T Davies, Day of the Doctor by Stephen Moffat, and there's City of Death by Douglas Adams, obviously, James. And James Goss, and Twice Upon a Time by Paul Cornell. Now, these came out in April, wasn't it?
Yeah, and there's Christmas Invasion as well. Did you see that one? There's five.
Yeah. And the Christmas Invasion. Yeah, I'm looking at it, but there's no title on it for the image I'm looking at, so I'm a bit too stupid. Oh, there's no words. I won't read it out then. And the Christmas Invasion. Did Russell T Davies adapt that?
Did Rusty Davis adapt which, sorry, Christmas Invasion?
Christmas Invasion, yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, no, Jenny Colgan did that. I knew there was someone else.
Yeah, I think they just allowed Jenny Colgan to write it.
Yeah, that's right.
Obviously from his material.
Yeah, sure, of course. So there's the five books, not the four books. And so they came out in April, and then you were at... you did a signing at the Big Forbidden Planet in London, didn't you?
Yeah, I did a signing, yeah. I was invited down by... Russell T Davies himself.
Right.
Yes, he dropped me an email and thanked me for all my hard work and asked me whether I'd like to join the panel. And then I got the official invite from Ebury or Penguin Random House, I think it is. And it was great, I'll be honest with you, it was great. When I went up there and I was a bit nervous because I'd never done it before. Didn't know what to expect. Arrived in London, Euston, gave myself plenty of time. Phoned the person in charge when I got there, and she said, oh, you know, we're around the corner in, I can't remember what the bar was called now, just around the corner from Forbidden Planet. So I walked up towards Forbidden Planet. When I got to Forbidden Planet, there was no one really out the front, and I was thinking, then this is about 3 o'clock. So I was thinking, oh, it's not very busy. Maybe it's not going to be that, you know, maybe people, you're going to get drips and drabs of people coming in and out, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, went round the corner, went in, had a drink with, I think Tom Spilsbury was there. He'd been interviewing RTD and Stephen Moffat for that video that was on YouTube.
Right, yeah.
And Stephen was there and Rusty Davis was there. And we all had little introductory hugs and hellos and things. And sat down, had a little drink and talk about art in its general form in Doctor Who. You know, Bellamy was mentioned and Helios and all the rest of it. And then walked up to Forbidden Planet and had a little natter with Stephen Moffat about Sherlock and, you know, what his plans were and stuff like that. Went into Forbidden Planet, went downstairs. Strange, because we got there and then the other authors turned up and, you know, Stephen and Russell were signing many of the books. So obviously they'd set up a kind of a, you know, you can have pre-signed books by Stephen and Russell, as well as people turning up to actually buy the books and then get them signed there and then.
Right.
So they were doing that while we were just kind of just getting to know each other. You know, Paul Cornell was there and then James Goss comes in with Jenny Colgan, and I left me coffee on the floor, hadn't I? And James Goss knocked it over everywhere when I went out the room, and I come back in and he's mopping the floor.
how the
mighty old. I was like, oh, sorry, I put that on the floor, didn't even see that. I was like, okay, it's fine. Anyway, we get upstairs, they say, you know, come on, you know, we're ready to go upstairs and get on the tables, kind of thing. And so we went up there, and so I was sitting on the end. So you had Russell T Davis was first, then Steve Moffat, and then you had I think it was Paul Cornell, then Jenny Colgan, then James, then me. I think the first few people coming through were just kind of, it wasn't very busy at all. And I think it was I don't know whether you've seen the Time Ladies on Twitter.
Oh, I'm aware of them. Yeah,
so there was a couple of them sort of come through Beth and that, and they were saying hello and that, and there was Crystal D, as you know, writes stuff at DWM and that. And there was a few other people kind of talk to the authors and that. And I said to James Gossett, well, this is pretty relaxed and easy, isn't it? You know, it's, you know, for an introduction to kind of signing books and that. And he said, oh, we haven't even started yet. He said, these are just the staff. who've been invited in to get stuff signed first. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I said there wasn't much of a queue at the front. He said, it's not at the front, it's at the back. So I said to the woman, who was you know, running the whole shebang. I said, you know, how big's the queue kind of thing? He said, oh, they've been queuing up for about 3 hours, four hours.
No.
It's round the block. Round the block, yeah. So originally I was invited to have a meal after this with the guys and that, and, you know, a few drinks and that before I headed on my train back. Because I didn't know what was going on, you see. So I didn't book a hotel or anything and stay over. So the idea was I'd go back on the latest train I could go back on, which was about 9:10 or something. And so people started filing. So they opened the doors and people started filing in. And people were coming through. And really nice, though. Really nice. You know, people were asking for photos with you and, you know, how'd you come up with the ideas and all that kind of thing. But what was happening was normally the authors kind of only sign their own book. Not because they say to people, I'll only sign my own book. It's just, I think the Doctor Who fans themselves just kind of only want that author to sign the book.
Yeah.
So they'd ask Russell to sign his Rose one and Stephen to sign Day of the Doctor and all the rest of it. But then when it come to me, we had these free posters as well. So if anyone was buying the books, you get a free signed poster as well from me.
Okay.
As a bonus. But what was happening was because people were asking me to sign the books, and because I did the covers for all the books, I was signing six things at a time.
Oh, no way.
And I'm starting to get a back. It was starting to become a backlog. And we weren't getting through fast enough. So they had to say to me, you know, if anyone asked, sign one book and a poster. And I said, okay, that's fine. So I had to do that for a while. So the lucky first, however many, had them all signed.
You needed your bionic Winter Soldier arm for that, didn't you?
I know, yeah. Big giant hand. I had Steve Cole standing behind me as well. He's been editing the books.
Right.
And he's a really nice guy. I mean, he's a top man. You know, he's written novels before and stuff. And he recently wrote a Bond sort of book, I think. But he's lovely. He was lovely. I was having a good little chat with him and a good laugh with him. And James Goss is hilarious. He was being nice, you know. He was introducing me all the time to people because people probably wonder who's this grey haired old git on the end there. But it was really nice, people. But it was coming through. It was only supposed to be an hour, and it went on for 2 hours, and then it was into the third hour, and the shop was shutting. But there's still loads of people outside, so we had to carry on. So I was looking at the watch, and I was thinking, right. Bang goes my dinner date with everyone, which I was really looking forward to because I'm going to have to get my train soon. So I was preempting, and while I was waiting for people to come down the line, I was signing loads of posters, just signing them, because when I was gone, you know.
That was it, yeah.
That was it. So I signed a big pile of posters while I was talking to everyone and signing other things and that was going on. And then I had to go because... You know, last train was virtually. I think I finally put my pen down at 8:45, and my train was at 9:07 in London. So I'd left it really late.
Did you have to run?
Yeah. So I said ta-ra to everyone, and you know, on the panel and stuff, and then I ran off down towards Leicester Square, nearly getting knocked down in the process. Me bag and everything, and I made it by 2 minutes. 2 minutes. Wow. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been homeless. Like, but it would have been like, have you ever seen Black Books where he's locked out of a shop?
Yeah, yeah.
And he's walking around and he's got no money. It would have been kind of that scenario. But I probably had to work in a fast food restaurant.
Well, it's funny because I was down in London a few days after you, and I had exactly the same problem, only I'd booked a hotel because I suspected I was going to have that problem of not being able to get back in time.
Yeah.
Now, I think you're slightly closer to London than we are, but doesn't the train terminate at Liverpool?
It does, yeah.
Yeah, whereas here, the train terminates at Edinburgh, so you'd think you'd be able to get home a little bit later. But no, you can't. No, it's 9:00 because you've got a connection to get... off the East Coast mainland to where I live. So yeah, it's it is crackers, a crackers insane situation. So I mean, that must be, you know, you've done Iron Maiden artwork on screen and Simple Minds artwork on screen, and you've done The Signing. These are all things that all just came about because of that piece of artwork.
Yes.
Back in 2005, which is quite amazing, isn't it?
It's a bit of luck. It's a bit of luck. It's luck. It's, you know, blessed to get be given that opportunity. It's hard work as well. You know, you don't... you know, I look at my work sometimes, I'm like, oh, state of that kind of thing. Because you know what's gone into it. Do you know what I mean? You know the flaws of it. You know what you had difficulty with. And I think every kind of designer, artist is the same. But I think in about 5 years' time or something, you pick one of these things up, you go, actually, that wasn't too bad. Do you know what I mean? But I've been very blessed. And but you know, you've also got to, you know, when I'm bigging myself up, you've got to have the talent to be able to produce these things as well. Otherwise, people wouldn't come back and ask you to do them. So Stuart, who I've been working with for years, you know, we get on great. We've got a great relationship, good trusting relationship. Even if I'm not working on something with him, he might bounce an idea off me over something else. Could be another artist or whatever, and I'll try and do what I can, ideas wise for him, and vice versa. And you know, if you're good enough, people will come back and seek you out and ask for your ideas and your input. And I've been quite blessed for that. I'm having a bit of a quiet time now, which is normal. You kind of drop off. I had a very, really intense, I think it was probably summer all the way through till April when the books were released. It was quite intense. I mean, that was like Simple Minds. I did some stuff for Pretenders, the Doctor Who books. There's quite a few things on. So that was quite intense, and now it's gone quiet. But it's probably a quiet time that I need to kind of have that rest and kind of get the pool refilled, creative pool refilled, so to speak, ready for the next round of whatever comes up.
I wanted to ask you a couple of questions. I just wanted to say that these covers really are a kind of, I think, as a vague critic, they're very much a kind of, amalgam is not the right word, but they're very much kind of affirming of like the type of artwork you've done over the years with the sort of the photorealism and the pop art combined without any tangible, you know, it's a seamless combination that sort of like springs from the page.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it took, I'm not going to lie, I mean, when I was, you know, the brief was to do a retro style in the vein of the reprints, and I think there was a couple of other books released. I think it was a Battlefield and the Visitation, in which Chris Kielos did a couple of cover updates too.
Right.
So they're all kind of fitting in the same vein. But I decided to do pointillism on it within Adobe Illustrator for the first time, and boy, that's a long time to do.
Well, what's the work rate for that? Because I'm imagining you must be like a few square inches a night or something.
Yes, it has to be. Yeah, I mean, you're talking about 40 hours probably for the whole thing, and then when you condense that down to evenings,
yeah,
and a couple of days off and things, you know, your evenings you're looking at what? 3 hours max, 4 hours max. So yeah, it was the turnover of getting the sketches out was quite quick, and luckily, you know, they liked the sketches straight off the bat. The majority, I think, it's only twice upon a time where there was a couple of variations I did. I had one with Mark Gatiss on originally, but I had to change a few of the elements, which is fine. You know, that's their prerogative. But they do take a while to do. Mm. And then the colouring, obviously, is the part that you can do at the end, obviously, sure, when you've got all the inks in. But yeah, they were a bit of an updated style on what I've already been doing, but I just used the these stipple effects. Now the problem is by the time I got to the third book, so I started with Christmas Invasion and then I did Day of the Doctor, and if you look at those two covers, the stippling's not the greatest. You know, if you really scrutinise those covers, which I think ironically makes them look better, because they're not bob on. Like, Matt Smith is not bob on. But by the time I get to Rose, and you look at Rose, and I've seen this a few times, people saying, you know, how photorealistic. Even my own wife was saying, that looks like it's a Photoshop job. Mm. It wasn't. But I was becoming quite accurate with it. That it was turning out quite photorealistic. Because that's what happens when you're working on something for such a long time, that technique, and you hone it and hone it and hone it, that's what happens. So when I first started doing vector artwork for Castabrus, the pieces of vectors that build up the actual picture itself, they were quite big and chunky, and there was probably, you'd probably say in one typical image, there was probably about 40 to 60 elements.
Yeah.
And by the time, 5 years later, I'm doing a vector illustration for Doctor Who, I'm doing Matt Smith's eyebrow, and it's got 1,000 strokes in it, just his eyebrow.
Wow.
That was the detail you go to, because you get more and more detailed as you go along.
Yeah.
Because you're striving for that realism, you're striving for that, pushing the boundaries more. But that wouldn't even be in it. That would have been two illustrations for Castabrus doing his eyebrow, probably. Three illustrations, maybe. Crackers. Probably more.
Crackers, isn't it?
I suppose
technology and you know, more demands for screen resolution plays a part there as well.
Yeah, I mean, these covers, you can. I mean, I did them at scale, so I deliberately. So you'll notice the stippling on mine compared to Chrysakelos. Chrysakelos is a lot finer. If I'd have done them to that size, I think it would have been there till I'd still be doing them now. Because there's just, but I also think maybe because he did them at a bigger scale, so he did them at probably maybe A3 size, possibly originally painted, possibly maybe even be a little bit bigger. I don't know for sure, but looking at the exhibition, they looked about A3 size, and then obviously when Target have shrunk the artwork down in the 70s, then it tightens up,
yeah, of course,
even
yeah.
further, so the dots become even more dense, if that's the right, probably the right word to say. So I did these at scale, so I can probably only boost them up to about, start getting a bit ropier, about A3, because you're bringing them up from the quality that they're supposed to be drawn at. Because with pointillism, they only work at the level that you paint them at. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
It's a bit like an oil painting. You can walk away from it. When you see an oil painting from further away, it looks amazing. When you get up up close, you can see all the brush strokes.
See everything,
and you can't make the visual as much. So they work. It's a bit of an illusion of sorts. There was also another reason it didn't scale as well, but I won't go into that. That's for another rainy day.
Well, we've talked for a while, so I'm just going to ask you one last question and let you be on your way. Of the five that you've done most recently for the Target, which one are you happiest with?
I'd say the Christmas Invasion, to be honest. I just think it really works. I think I posted a photo of this and the very first Target novel I ever bought, which was in like 1983, The Daleks, David Whittaker, and there's actually not much between them. The continuity's there, I feel, and I think that's the closest. I think Twice Upon a Time is okay, but I think that was a little bit rushed in the end. I was running out of time a little bit. There was a few changes. One thing everyone loved was the Daleks. So I made a good decision there on mixing the Daleks up. So I mixed them up from a TV21 style Dalek with a new style Dalek, as a nod to those Achilleos Day of the Daleks covers where he just used Ron Turner's TV21 Daleks. on the court, which I love, by the way. I just think that's he probably did it because he didn't have much reference, but the genius of using those Daleks on the cover just make those covers for me.
Yeah,
and that's Daleks, Dalek Invasion of Earth, Day of the Daleks. It's probably another one, isn't it? Probably another one. So yeah, the Christmas Invasion is probably the one I'm happiest with. I'll probably be happy with them all in about 5 years' time. It's just that you work on them all the time. You get to see looking at them. It's just normal.
So is there any more on the horizon for you with Doctor Who?
Not at the moment. There's been rumours that they might do some more. I'd be very surprised if they didn't do some more. Whether they asked me or not to do them, I don't know. But they've been very successful. And I think, you know, why not? Why not do more? Do as many as you can do for the new series. People love them.
Yeah.
It's getting people back into reading. You know, I've had loads of nice tweets and messages about how people have been inspired to draw in that style and draw again. And it's all positive. It's all positive things. And I think they should. I think they should probably do another 10 in this style. So maybe I'll do a couple of them, or I'd be happy to do a couple of them in this style with the foil embossed logo from the Pertwee era. And then I think, like the old Targets, maybe transition over into this new 13th Doctor look and feel with the new logo, because I'm not sure how strong the new logo is on its own.
Right, yeah.
It's quite thin. This is me talking purely as a graphic designer. It hasn't much shelf impact, as in the old Doctor Who Target novels, even with the neon logo, had more shelf impact. You knew it was Doctor Who when as soon as you'd seen them.
Yeah, of course.
The
diamond
logo was Doctor Who. Very bold, very thick. Then you could put colour in them. So they always seem to work. This new Doctor Who logo, I've seen it on the old merchandise. I don't think it works that great. It's an entirely understandable decision made by the BBC and the Doctor Who brand team to have a consistent approach.
Of course, yeah.
on the brand. I totally understand that. I deal with that every single day for everyone from Rolls-Royce all the way up to United Utilities Water. But I think with the Doctor Who Target novels, I think they need to have that throwback look to them to work. Otherwise, they're just, you know, maybe they do 13th Doctor books and they're totally different.
I think it's when you're doing novelizations, when you're doing original novels, I think you can get away with having the current logo. Well, if you're doing adaptations of classic stories, then I think you're absolutely right, yeah.
Yeah, I think they just need to, if they're going to go down that route. And like I say, I'm a graphic designer and I've dealt with brands all my life. Establish the brand, establish the books first. So do a run of maybe 15 of these books of the strongest stories to start with. So could be the next batch, could be, don't know, Dalek, Human Nature or whatever. And then as you get on further, you know, maybe you try different styles, different artists, different logo on.
Photographs.
Well, I personally wouldn't go down the photograph route. I think there's been plenty of Doctor Who books with photographs on of the new series. And I think, you know, this has tapped into, you know, it's not only people's childhood and older fans, but new fans as well. New fans are lapping it up. You know, new fans have never had Target books. Now they have. Now they've got a couple. They want more.
They want more. Yeah.
They want to be collecting the way we collected when we were younger, and going to those bookstores and seeing new ones on the shelf. And you know, there's nothing wrong with tapping into nostalgia and having a brand that is nostalgic to go alongside all the other stuff that you do. That's my two penneth worth on it. We'll see what the future brings, but they're probably just. Because they only come out last month. I mean, they're into the second reprint, so, you know, they've done they've done well. They've done really well to be on a second reprint already. I'd be very surprised if they don't do any more.
Well, fingers crossed we're involved.
Yeah, yeah. Just
see how it goes.
Make the best before them.
Take a holiday first.
Yes.
Take a holiday first. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's podcast with a K. Anthony Dry, thank you very much for joining us, and all the best with your future art and design.
Thank you very much.
This is a Beyond Casterbers podcast. Available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCasterbers.com.